This is our league, and this is your league. From the 55-yard line on CFL America Radio and the Sports History Network.
This is a league of A's and BCs. It's green and red and gold and black and blue. This is a league with two official languages and many unofficial languages. It's East versus West, wheat versus iron, love versus hate. This is a league where superstars are extraordinary and ordinary at the same time. It's a league of ice, of fog, of mud and wind. And for one Sunday in November, it's the nation's glue. This is a league as diverse as a country, a league of Jacksons and Kwongs, Johnsons, Moscas, O'Shea's, and Haji Razulis. This is his league, her league, and their league. It's my league, and it's your league. This is our league.
Welcome to the 55-yard line, coming to you virtually from the football capital of the American South of Birmingham, Alabama, and the French-Canadian corridor of Illinois in the shadow of the Sears Tower. We are Scott and Greg, and this is our podcast premiere here on the Sports History Network, where we want to give special thanks to George Washington at voevolution.com for that very inspiring intro that he recorded for us. If you need a quality introduction like you just heard, please go to voevolution.com. And not only are we a client, but George is a close personal friend of mine who I went to high school with. So I can definitely vouch for his work. And also he is, and again, I might be going a little off topic as we start the show, but if you know you've heard that voice before, heard that voice elsewhere before, he's also the Green Lantern on DC Universes Online. So an equally special thanks to Arnie Chapman and Sports History Network for letting us be part of the sportshistorynetwork.com team. I am Greg, and on our premiere episodes, I'm talking here with Scott about his book, The Home Team, My Bromance with Off-Brand Football. And with that said, Scott, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good, Greg. How are you, sir?
Good, good. Well, I see that we are recording after the initial take on this with midway in. I'm like, wait a minute, we're not recording. Oh, damn, start over. So
that's actually good though, because we should start out poorly and then get better as we go along.
Well, that's true. That's true. And I listen to a lot of talk radio here in Chicago. And actually that's a lot better than a lot of the intros that some of the talk radio shows, at least the ones I used to listen to that are unfortunately no longer on the air. They had some wacky openings. So, and we'll at some point as we go into these podcast episodes on different topics, we are going to talk about voices and football voices and radio and all that, but we're here to talk books today, you know, but with Scott and his book. But, you know, as we go along in these, you know, as we're going to be going along here in the podcast land, we're going to be talking football, football books, football, pop culture, football hobbies. That's another thing. Scott and I have, as we have kicked around what we should talk about on a podcast, there are a lot of topics that aren't covered by other football podcasters. So we want to be able to, in our podcast, kind of talk more about the other things out there regarding football as it relates to hobby, history, and like I said, pop culture and, you know, memories. Scott and I are both children of the 70s and 80s, so for us, football has a very, very deep meaning, and Scott is a retired sports writer down in Alabama and down in South Carolina. So, and me, myself, I am just a football crazy retired Navy officer. So, Scott, did I miss anything?
No, I believe you covered everything. So we're done, and that was a great opening episode.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Yeah, well, It's a nice day here in Chicago, and I know it's probably a nice day down where you're at.
I think the high today was 73 and it was clear. So it's absolutely.
It is perfect football weather up here.
What's your temp?
It was 60s last I checked.
Yeah, that is.
It was. It feels like a fall day, though. We got snow coming on Tuesday. So, which is also perfect football weather, too, if you ask me. But so
football in the snow is good.
It is. But I've played in games, went back in high school where, you know, it was single digits. That's not fun. I'll take hot weather any day. So, all right. Well, let's get rolling here. Let's talk about your book. And for those of you who are listening to the podcast and have not read Scott's book, let me just kind of tell you what it's all about. Scott, after he retired, set about writing a book about growing up, about his time in Birmingham. He's in South Carolina now and he's moving back soon to Birmingham. So our intro, him being in Birmingham, he is in his heart still in Birmingham.
Absolutely. Right, I'm a Birmingham boy. So.
And so his book is about pro football in Birmingham, going all the way back to your book starts off with the World Football League. For many of those listening, though I would suspect many of those listening to this podcast well remember the World Football League.
I would think so. As far as football history podcast folk, yeah. I think they are familiar. A lot of people probably aren't if they're just a casual football fan, just considering, you know, it lasted one full season in 74, rebooted in 75 and folded midway. So right. It's not like it has this huge legacy among modern football fans, but you know, for guys like us, it still resonates.
And this is where, you know, you and I were talking off before we started recording, you know, we have a bit of an age gap between us. I don't remember the World Football League because I was all of seven and growing up in Michigan.
Okay. What part of Michigan did you grow up in?
I spent a few years in Brighton before my family moved back to our hometown just south of Chicago.
But you were always in the neighborhood of major professional sports. So
I have always been.
Right.
Yeah, it is always the Cubs, the Sox, the Bears have been ubiquitous throughout my entire life.
Well, and that, you know, that's what was so different from people who grew up in Alabama in the 60s, 70s or whatever. I mean, it was, in terms of football, it was all college football. You know, you had Alabama or Auburn were your major college league baseball. Mm-hmm. So when the World Football League came along, and considering the World Football League at least aspired to be a major league, that was huge for us. I mean, for those of us who had never been really exposed to professional football other than watching it on television, to have it in our city, that was a huge deal, especially for a kid like me. I'm 13 years old.
Yeah.
And going to Legion Field on that opening night, July 10th, 1974, that was incredible. I mean, I remember almost everything about that night. I'll never forget it just because it was such a huge deal.
And that's what was great about, and you know, great about reading your book. Now, when I read your book, we were not friends yet.
We were enemies actually.
Yeah. Yeah. We were Twitter frenemies, I guess. But no, that's what I loved about writing your book, because you wrote it from the fans' perspective and you wrote it from the perspective of somebody who remembers well what it was like being that age.
Yeah, kind of wanted to do it from the standpoint of, well, like you, you know, the way you've grown up with football, obviously your perspective changes over the years. I mean, when you're young, you think that the players are playing for you. You're not thinking about money. You don't think of it as a business. Right. But as you get older, you kind of understand things better. So your perspective changes. So when I wrote this, I didn't want to write it from the standpoint of, okay, I'm now looking back with all these years of knowledge about the World Football League and the USFL and writing about it from that standpoint. I wanted to write about it as I felt it at the time. And so it obviously sort of, you know, depending on the leagues and depending on my age, it changed pretty dramatically over the years.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, I mean, I've got, you know, as you can see, well, those of you off, you know, on the radio, as I like to call it, can't see my bookshelf, but I've got a giant football history bookshelf in the back. But my favorite, the books I like to read the most are the books I love the best are the ones that are written from the perspective of an author who remembers what it was like being a kid. And that's what's great about your book. That's why I read it literally in one day. I just could not put it down.
Well, I wanted it to be easy, and I wanted it to be or an easy read. And it was for just what you said. I wanted people, whether they followed the World Football League or not, even if they grew up in a city that had major league sports, I kind of wanted to maybe help them revisit that feeling. Because when I think about you being in Chicago, I think, my God, that's incredible. You got the Bears in football, you got the Cubs and White Sox, you got, hockey, you got everything. But from my standpoint, when you did get something, it was huge.
Right.
Because that was the only game in town. I mean, when it came to pro football in 1974, the Birmingham American, for a kid living in Birmingham, Alabama, there was nothing bigger than that.
Right.
That was bigger than the NFL, AFL, anything I'd ever imagined.
Well, that gets me into, I wanted to know, because, again, it's been a few months since I've read the book. I mean, it is, I'll be honest with you, and I've read so many football books since. But let me ask you, in terms of how did Birmingham itself respond to having a pro team?
Well, when it came to the World Football League, the first season in 74, Birmingham was all over it. I mean, in terms of attendance, the city really embraced it. And of course, it didn't hurt that Birmingham won their first 10 games of the season.
Right.
But, their opening night crowd, I think officially when people look back, the attendance was, I believe, officially around 45,000. But it was announced at 55,000. At the time, the stadium seated 72,000.
Right.
Now, Alabama had no problem selling, the University of Alabama football team had no problem selling it out. But for a professional team to come along and have that many people show up on a brutally hot summer night in July, that was really impressive. But then 3 weeks later, and that still to this day is one of the wildest crowds I've ever been a part of. I mean, everybody just completely into it.
And this is the first game with the Americans playing.
Yeah, the first game they played, the one where they had 45,000 or whatever.
Yeah.
That was against the Southern Cal Sun, which you can see behind me.
I love that. And I love the jersey, the magenta jersey behind you. And I also have I actually have two Southern California Suns pennants. One's packed away and the other one is up with my USFL and my World League of American Football pennants.
I mean, still the greatest uniforms in football history, magenta jerseys and orange pants. So
yes.
That's the first, obviously I'm rooting for the Americans. They're wearing their home white.
Right.
But Southern Cal comes on the field wearing that. I thought, man, this is the most 70s things ever. I mean, this is just fantastic.
Which explains a lot why back in the 70s, I became a Dolphins fan. Just, I think, because of the color of the uniforms.
For the NFL at that time, that was pretty dramatic for a team to come out in aqua uniforms.
And then the Buccaneers, I think about the time I realized there was a thing called pro football, that's when the Bucs came out. And those, to this day, I love those creamsicles.
Yeah, those are still maybe the sweetest NFL unis ever.
Yeah.
I love those things. Wish they still had it.
Well, speaking of the NFL, you're a Jets fan.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And so suffering just like Bears and Cubs fans do.
Well, and the thing is, the one Jets Super Bowl, I'm a kid.
Yeah.
That was so long ago. And, nothing even close to that since then. So, yeah, you just learn to settle for less when you're a Jets fan.
It was interesting when we had the draft down here in Chicago, because where the draft was being held for the 2 years it was here was literally one block from my office. So I would always just kind of watch the Jets fans made their presence known. And, it's to this day, I just love Jets fans because they're the eternal optimists, but they're always getting their heart broken, much like Cub fans too. And it's the same thing. It's like, yeah, I can relate as a Cub fan.
Fan, you have a recent World Series. I mean, for a Jets fan, you go back to the 68
yeah.
season and the 69 Super Bowl. And that's a way.
Well, that was
back.
The week that the world slipped off its axis too. And that's a whole nother subject after that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was, as I'd say, people, when the Cubs won the World Series here, that was a surreal moment. I watched every pitch of every game. And even to this day, I still get emotional about it. And, the next day downtown Chicago, it was a surreal moment. People were, and it was kind of empty. It wasn't pandemic empty, but it was a lot of people didn't make it to work the next day. And you could tell because we were all up super late watching the game.
Kind of sad about the Birmingham Americans because they won the one and only WFL championship, which based on the way things started, you know, I should have been dancing in the streets. But by the time we got to that point in the season, even kids like me realized that the WFL was really struggling. You know, players mm-hmm. weren't getting paid. Franchises were folding. And I think there were only like 30,000 people at the championship game where they beat the Florida Blazers. Wow. So that was kind of – everything happened under the fog of a league that was about to collapse. And, you know, with so much enthusiasm that it started with, which I right. obviously mentioned in the book, by the time you reach the finish line of the first season, you sort of – you became – this might not be as – not that you would ever use the term financially solvent when you're 13 –
right.
But you realize that the WFL was not financially solvent, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, and that kind of gets me, you know, talking about pro football in Birmingham. So you had the Americans and the Vulcans just, you know, fizzle out. And then you didn't really have anything until the 80s when the Stallions came to town. So now the Stallions are a bit, the whole USFL, and it's one of those topics when we talk about failed leagues and woulda, coulda, shouldas. I mean, I think you and I both know that the USFL could have succeeded, but for factors outside the control of the players, and even, well, we can blame the owners. We will blame the owners on that. But in terms of the amount of money that, I mean, they moved to this, they moved to the fall, they shot themselves in the foot, but there was support for USFL teams. And in Birmingham, I never got the sense that nobody came out to the games, at least when I would watch, you know, watching old YouTube stuff, you know, YouTube games, I have always sensed that there was support in Birmingham, you know, for the Stallions.
You know, for the most part, there was. It was their first game was against the Michigan Panthers, and it was on a Monday night. It was kind of rainy, and there was just a little over 30,000 fans there. So that, you know, when you look back at the way the Birmingham Americans drew, you know, that wasn't really that great. And I'm thinking, maybe, right. you know, Birmingham doesn't quite have the football fever that they once did. But Stallions attendance was all over the map. If you take all three seasons and combine it, it was pretty good. But, you know, there were nights when they'd have 40 or 50,000. There were times when they would have 10 or 12,000. And by the time they got to their very, what turned out to be their very last game,
right.
where they played the Baltimore Stars in the semifinal
yeah.
of the game. Now, yeah. It's 311 degrees at Allegiant Field, you know, on a you know, July right. afternoon or whatever.
Right.
But even so, you know, people who love their sports, you know, they're not going to let the weather get in the way. So it was kind of, it really was sort of all over the map as okay. far as attendance. But,
right.
you know, that was clearly, I think, the most talented and best football franchise Birmingham ever had. I mean, the Stallions were really, really good,
yeah.
especially their third year.
Yeah, I know. I, you know, you and I've talked, you know, I'm a big simulation football guy. So I have all those seasons of the USFL on disc and I'm able to simulate out seasons. And the Stallions are always, they're competitive. Every time I hit click and go simulate the seasons, the Stallions are right there. You know, they usually, sometimes they miss the playoffs, sometimes they don't, but they were always competitive.
Yeah, their first season, they were basically a 500 team. They were a playoff yeah. team the second year. And then the third year, they were probably maybe the third best team in the league behind Baltimore and Oakland. You know,
okay.
I believe Oakland was the other really good team in 85. But
yeah, because it was 85. It was the Stars and the Invaders in that very last game.
And that was sad because I kind of knew, even though when the 85 season ended and they were going to take off, you know, they were going to come back in the fall
right.
of 86. I was kind of a big boy by then.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in my 20s and I sort of knew.
Yeah. Now, see, it's different for me with the USFL. When the USFL started, I was 15 and I lived out in the country and we had, you know, we didn't have cable. We had an aerial. So, I mean, it was on ABC and that was it. And I was excited for it starting, and I watched the first few games. But then, as you know, as you're a kid, you lose, you know, you kind of lose interest after a while, even though it's in the background and you still are, you know, tuned into it. But then I started, you know, the next season, I was 16-year-old, you know, working all my weekends. So it wasn't until everything went to YouTube that I was able to watch stuff that I wish I would have watched back then.
Right.
And though it is beautiful about YouTube, we can hear Howard Cosell's voice.
Well, the thing is, I mean, you can really just travel back in time. I mean, you can watch an entire, whether it's, you know, I've watched Super Bowl III many times on YouTube. But yeah, I've watched a lot of old when CFL in America, the CFL was in America.
Right.
And the Barracudas, I've seen Barracudas games on YouTube. So it's a great.
Yeah. And that, you know, talking about the Barracudas, so the Stallions fold up and leave. The next big team that comes through Birmingham is the Barracudas, which is an aptly named team. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was saying before the Barracudas, it was the World League of American Football.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. That's right. I'm sorry. I'm jumping ahead here.
No, that's fine because I'm like you. I'm more of a CFL guy anyway. And the World League, the Birmingham team in the World League, I just, you know, the league itself was fine, but the Birmingham team, they were kind of boring. I mean, they had a decent defense, but God, they were hard to watch. So that was one of those teams that just, you know, by then, after having my heart broken by the Americans, Vulcans, and Stallions, by the time the fire came and went, you know, I mean, I hated it for any players, coaches, or support personnel to lose their job, just as I always would. But as far as
you, Scott, you broke up there at the end there.
I'm sorry. Got me back here.
Yeah, I got you back. So you were saying about the Birmingham when the Stallions left, when the Riders.
Well, it was the Birmingham Fire, and when when they went out of business, from a fan standpoint, that didn't bother me that much.
Right.
You know, back when the World League rebooted and then eventually changed into NFL Europe and NFL Europa, it was a little more interesting then because it was just a different vibe at that point.
Right. I remember, for whatever reason, I was thinking Riders, but of course I'm thinking CFL, San Antonio, and we're talking CFL, so the Riders get thrown around a lot. I apologize.
Yeah, there was the San Antonio Riders in the World League, so, you know.
But when the World League, when that league started, I think I was in grad school. Yeah, I was in grad school. So I caught the very beginning. And the thing was, I remember with that league, it's just like you said, nobody was into it. Nobody was excited for it like they were the USFL, even though they had the big TV contract and everything. There was no excitement that went along with it, at least on the TV.
No, and I think, you know, I mean, I can't speak for any fan other than me, but again, the World Football League, whether they were or whether they weren't, they aspired to be major league.
Right.
Same is true with the USFL. And if you look at some of the guys that they signed and guys who are currently in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, they were pretty close to major league.
Yeah.
But then when you got to the World League of American Football, it was a developmental league for the NFL. That's what it was designed for.
And you knew you were getting minor league football too.
Exactly. And they could call it whatever they wanted to, as being a major minor league, and that's fine, but we're not good enough to play in the NFL, at least yet.
Right.
And so the NFL formed a league to try to develop them, which was great, but still it's not what you were getting with the World League.
Right. Right. Well, and then so when the World League up and, you know, I mean, it was only around for what, two seasons?
Yeah, two seasons in North America, and then took a year off, and then regrouped in Europe.
So when the Barracudas came a couple of years later, did people in Birmingham kind of look at it the same way, like this is minor league football?
Well, see, that's what's weird, because I was probably the happiest sports writer in the state of Alabama that we were getting a CFL team.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess I refused to look at the happening in terms of some of the American franchises other than Baltimore.
Yeah.
But I just assumed, considering – since this would finally be the one team in Birmingham, the one professional football team that was going to last. So I was absolutely pumped.
Yeah.
As a sports writer, I couldn't really be a fan. But on my own time, I was a huge fan, and I was hoping that people in Birmingham would really respond to it. And their first home game was against the Hamilton Tiger Cats, which has always been my favorite CFL team, except for that season.
Right.
So I'm thrilled. I'm thinking, oh God, I finally get to see the Hamilton Tiger Cats playing my Birmingham Barracudas.
Mm-hmm.
And there were, I think, 38,000 people at that game. And I thought, well, this is good. This is a super start for this league. And, you know, hopefully they'll take off and the fans will support them. But every game got worse to the point where they were literally towards the end of the season down to 2,000 and 3,000 fans.
Wow. Wow. Now, with the stadium, did they have to make adjustments for an American field?
Yeah, they did. I mean, their end zones couldn't be completely 20 yards deep. And I think they might have also had some issues with the width. That, you know, it was kind of like how Major League Baseball has the different, you know, field dimensions. That's sort of what they had to deal with some of the American teams. And Birmingham was one of those teams.
Okay.
But to me, that was kind of charming. I thought, oh, well, that's okay. You know,
yeah.
I don't mind an 18-yard end zone. I mean, that's fine. But But obviously the fans here, you know, once college football season started, they just went away in droves. And the thing is, Birmingham, unlike a lot of CFL teams, played a lot of their games on Sunday, which I thought originally was a smart move because you're not competing with college. But what I didn't realize was that there were so many people who would just rather stay home and watch the NFL than come out to Legion Field and watch the CFL.
Right.
So
did weather, And did weather play a factor in the CFL attendance, you think? I mean, I've been down in the South and during that time of year in full pads and helmets. So, I mean, you know, when I was getting ready to deploy to Iraq. So that's kind of my, I'm like, I know what that heat feels like. So
no heat. Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it made any difference. I mean, yeah, when they started, it was in the summer and they played,
right,
you know, games at night. It wasn't pleasant, but you know, then again, the World Football League, you know, first season, they started in July. And the thing is, the CFL team, by the time their season ended, it was during traditional football season. So it was weather everyone was used to, but they just didn't care. I mean, that's just the bottom line. Just not enough people cared about the Barracudas.
You know, that was one of the questions I wanted to ask you. So it sounds to me like the media and fans, just there was no interest.
Yeah, there really was. And I was, you know, I think I was one of the last people thinking, gee, I really hope this lasts. You know, as you look around and there's people at a 80,000 seat stadium.
Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty sad. But I think, you know, if you, they were the only American-based CFL team that had a real legitimate following. Everything else,
right,
I think all the other franchises were pretty much just grasping at straws.
Well, everything I've read and everything I know, I mean, Baltimore was the exception to, you know, it seems like every rule in football, there's the Baltimore exception. And, you know, for the CFL, I mean, Baltimore, you know, we all know how that all ended with everybody, you know, the Browns moving out to Baltimore and, you know, but let me ask you, in terms of just, could the CFL have worked down there if given a couple more years, you think?
I really don't. I mean, I, $20 a ticket, you know,
right.
I can't buy tickets for 70,000 people. I don't know. I think maybe, you know, whereas you're a guy and I'm a guy where we like the three downs, we like 12 to a side and the longer, wider, faster and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. I just, you know, maybe now, I mean, that's been, 25 years or whatever?
Yeah, it's 25 years this year.
It just seems like that brand of football, I just don't think enough people down here cared. So
when the XFL came to town, did anybody, what was the reaction for the XFL coming to town? Was there a buzz that wasn't artificially generated?
I think there was originally a pretty good buzz simply because, you know, Vince McMahon had already established himself as you know, he's a big wrestling guy, but I mean, he was already a media mogul and he had built a very successful empire.
Yeah.
And I think people thought, okay, well, he can probably, considering his, you know, his talent in terms of marketing or whatever, he can probably do the same thing here. So when they came, I mean, I knew just based on when they mentioned what the salaries were going to be and everything else, it was still going to be at best AAA football. But I thought, okay, you know, if he markets it right, because he's going to do all this cool in-game stuff, you know, maybe this will be a product worth watching.
Right.
And attendance was decent at the start of the Birmingham Bowl.
And that was actually one of my questions as I was sitting here kind of formulating things. Because if you watch the YouTube clips of the XFL, you watch the games, you don't see crowd shots.
Well, and what's funny is there were places, I think Chicago, oddly enough, drew pretty well, and San Francisco drew pretty well.
I got to go back and watch those games.
You know, I'm not talking 70,000, but I mean, just for what it was, it drew pretty well. But Birmingham and a lot finished the season on a 7-game losing streak. And I think by the end of the year, I should know this because I'm pretty sure I put it in the book, but they were either last or next to last in XFL attendance.
People
just kind of bailed on it because they, you know, again, they were just getting hammered every game and they just weren't fun to watch.
Wow. And so when the Iron came to town after that, was the Iron kind of in the same boat before they just kind of up and fizzled away too, or?
You know, that was yet again, I'm excited because I'd been away from Birmingham for a while and I'd already, you know, started my website and kind of gotten into alternative football.
Right.
This is kind of neat.
Yeah.
And I started the process of writing my book when the Iron came to town. So I went to their opening game at Legion Field and covered it, and even went to Atlanta. Their attendance was pretty poor, but in the defense of that, you'd mentioned weather earlier. Weather was horrible.
Yeah.
There were a couple of games where there were tornado warnings.
Yeah, now that I think about it, I kind of vaguely remember that. Because when the leak started up, I was down in Arizona. So I was able to, you know, catch a few hotshot games on the TV, and I remember them talking about weather and stuff like that.
Yeah, Mother Nature did the iron no favors whatsoever. So that, yeah. I mean, had they had nicer weather, the attendance would have been a little bit better, but they never, I don't think it was ever a situation where they just captured the imagination of the city. Certainly nothing like the Americans, Vulcans, or Stallions. Nothing like that.
Okay. Well, and so, you know, kind of tying it all together, and, you know, we are a Canadian/American football podcast. So we got a little drama going on with the CFL and with the XFL, or as I termed it on the Turf District a few weeks ago, a league with logos and a business plan. So do you think, because you're the only one of the few people that I know of that has covered both the CFL and XFL and seen all this up close. So with what, you know, supposedly this week we're going to find something, you know, supposedly something's going to be said about this quote unquote alliance merger. Who knows what it's going to be? Do you think there's hope for the CFL and the XFL at this point, given the history that we know about football, that's not NFL and not specifically CFL?
Okay. Now are you asking, is there hope for if they merge, if it becomes a viable league? I don't know. I mean, I really don't, because if there is some sort of merger and if they adopt the four down game,
right,
then there is no more Canadian football.
Right.
I mean, I'm sorry. There's just not there. There are franchises. They'll still be the Toronto Argonauts or whatever, but the CFL would be gone.
Right.
And I don't know. It's still hard for me to wrap my brain around what they're trying. I mean, I know what they're trying to do. They're trying to get up enough money to where they can survive.
Right.
And, you know, I think CFL's first problem is to try to get – they go two straight years and don't have a season, then you probably don't have a CFL anymore. I mean, I don't know.
And I'm on the same page with you. You know, I think the CFL – I think they got to keep the three-down football. I mean, I think that's kind of how you – at least in my opinion, you know, you and I have both heard the saying, you know, Canadians, they don't like they don't like Canadian football. They'd rather have four-down football. They watch the NFL. But, you know, with that said, you know, college football ratings up there are not up. I mean, NFL interest is way up, but there's so many different variables that go into a lot of things. But we know from watching the TV that people aren't going to CFL games. And, you know, we know for a fact that they're losing money. I mean, it is it's a great product, but from my perspective, and I know from your perspective, it's just not marketed well.
Yeah, and that's the thing. We can't, and you're exactly right. I mean, we can't. I mean, I don't know what you have to do to get people in the stands or what you have to do to change the game. Because, I think a lot of times when people talk about these leagues and what you have to do in terms of marketing, you're probably thinking more in terms of young people.
Right.
And even though I'm not a young person, I like to think I'm young at heart and sort of, know what they like. And I'm just not sure that there's this vast number of young people now who are really interested enough to make a difference. I mean, you got The Rock and that's all great and wonderful. And you got Redbird Capital and Danny Garcia, and there's intelligence and money and everything you could possibly need, but you sink all that money into it. And Vince McMahon sunk a lot of money in the XFL too. Lewis was never really that good. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
I apologize, but we lost you there for a little bit with the connection. It's okay.
I was saying some beautiful stuff too. That's going to be hard to repeat. Yeah, where did we leave off? I was rambling. I was getting all emotional.
That's
there
okay.
CFL.
No, I'm talking about Vince McMahon.
Yeah, no, I mean, just the league in general. I mean, people can have money and people can market, but I just don't know if there's some magic formula to make enough people care to make these businesses succeed. Because the thing is, you wouldn't have the NFL if at some point they didn't start making money,
right?
You know, and that's the whole deal. Whether you have the XFL, the CFL, or a combination, If you go 3, 4, 5 years and you're just losing money, no matter what you're doing marketing wise, it's, you know, it's going to die. People are going to start spending their money on something they can make money on. And I just don't know. I just don't know if there's a market anymore for spring football enough to keep it viable.
You know, well, I mean, could they go, you know, I mean, even, yeah, I mean, the season wise, you know, and you and I both know it's everybody's talking about, well, they can't start in the spring in Canada. Well, there's a way to work that out in terms of Canadians. They even, you know, a couple podcasts I was listening to were saying, well, training camps. Well, you can move your training camps down south. And much like back when we were kids growing up, when, you know, a lot of NFL teams shared baseball stadiums and they couldn't play in those baseball stadiums till after October.
Right.
So, I mean, there's that option that the Canadian teams start their season down south. And then, of course, all the American teams later in the summer, you know, instead of playing in the dead of in the heat of Arizona or the heat of Birmingham or in the heat of Atlanta, Orlando, they play, you know, the later games during the season up north. I mean, there's that option. Yeah, but I agree with you in terms of, I don't know if there is a market for spring football. I mean, we've, you know, the history of it shows that it hasn't worked so far. Even the last version of the XFL, which was until we started running from zombies a year ago. And the AAF, I mean, it was funny with the AAF. My nephew, he's like, hey, I'm into this AAF thing. He goes, are you? I go, no, I'm not emotionally invested because I've seen how this is going to play. I know how this is going to play out.
I know how this movie ends.
Yeah. And it ended a lot sooner than I thought it was going to end. But yeah, no, I agree there with you. I think, you know, and again, when this podcast comes out, it'll be after what comes out with the CFL, that announcement with the Board of Governors. But I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think we're going to know any more than what we know already right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think this week they're just going to discuss the immediacy of this season. You know, when can they start it? Are they going to start it? And that sort of thing. And but as far as some sort of combined league, I mean, you know, at first, I think you and I have talked about this just as friends. At first, I kind of dismissed the whole concept of a merger. I thought they were just going to do some resource sharing. But, you know, when I listen to people supposedly in the know, and I'm not one of those people, so I try to listen to people who are close to the situation, it certainly does sound like that the major powers that be are shooting for a merger. But,
and you can see why they would.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, from business standpoint, you got to do something to stay in business.
Yeah.
But just as a guy who loves this, and then if that combined league folds, that's it. CFL's gone. You know, CFL will be gone anyway if they combine leagues. But whereas unlike in the mid 90s, when the American franchises folded, you still had a CFL.
Yeah.
This time, you know, all the cards fall down. I mean, there's nothing left.
So. Well, in the pandemic, I mean, you and I both know that it's always been financially a risky move with the CFL. I mean, I would watch TV and going, where are the people? Where are the people? And, you know, the Twitter, you know, it's easy to get wrapped up on what people say on Twitter. But
not real life. I mean, we love Twitter.
Not
Twitter's
all.
Not real life.
Not at all. But it gives you perspective. And especially you and I mean, we're not Canadian. So we have a different perspective on what the CFL is and what the problems are. And, you know, but we look at it obviously from the American perspective going, and it's easy. I think for us at times, I mean, I grew up in an area where, you know, I live in an area that's as big as Toronto. So I look at say the Argonauts going, how can they not? I don't get why nobody's going to Argos games, because I know, you know, Chicago and Toronto, they have stadiums by the lake. Kind of look at the Bears, and I know the history of the Argonauts. I mean, that, you know, back in the 70s, you know, back in the 60s and 70s and 80s, people were going to the games, and it makes you wonder, well, why the teams didn't get bad. I mean, you know, the teams, you know, it's not like they were the Expos, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, you know, and when you think about it, you know, the NFL's at 32 teams. Say they expand to 36, and three of those cities are Toronto, Vancouver, and Montreal. Can you imagine the fan base then?
Yeah, it's game over for the CFL.
Right,
though
right.
I do think you could put the NFL in Winnipeg and Saskatchewan, Edmonton. But
and
again,
it just surprises me a little bit. I mean, you know, for a while the NFL said they were going to stop at 28, and then when they got to 32, they're going to stop at 32. But now they're still dangling that London carrot that they may put a franchise there, which would be the weirdest thing ever. Yeah. But I think they're going to get to 36 teams.
I think I think so too, especially in our lifetime. But, you know, talking about, you know, the Canadian cities, you know, that would lose out, Edmonton, Saskatchewan, and Winnipeg, and, you know, even Ottawa and Hamilton's right next to Buffalo. So that's kind of out right there. But, you know, those are cities that could support an NFL franchise. All three. I mean, oh, and Calgary too. I forgot to throw Calgary in. I mean, they could all easily support. You know, the problem is stadiums. And we know moving forward after all this is said and done, government supported stadiums are not going to fly anymore.
No, that ship has sailed and sunk.
Yeah.
But you know, me just as a CFL guy, and you're exactly right. I'm not from Canada, but I'm one of those people that I like the fact that they have a ratio. I like the fact that there's a league for Canadian players, you know, to shine in. And it would just, and I think we've discussed this before as well. I almost look at the CFL. I mean, I love it. It's my favorite brand of tackle football. Yeah, but that being said, I almost look at it as a different sport. And, you know, you were talking about how do you market it? And that's kind of the way I think of it, because sure, I root for the Jets and the NFL. And it's a different sport. It's a totally different thing than the NFL. And I wish there could be some balance where the people who aren't showing up in Canada, especially since the games are on Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays, they're really not, you know, competing with most of the NFL games.
Yeah.
Could support their league and still enjoy the NFL. But,
You know, what I love about the Canadian league is it's Canadian. It is, you know, I love the Canadian spirit. I love the Canadian, Canadian patriotism. And so when I watch, I mean, for me, pro sports, I've always loved the Canadian teams in all pro sports. I mean, my most memorable Cubs game was a game against the Expos. And I wanted my dad to take me there because I wanted to hear the Canadian anthem. And as luck would turn out, it was also one of Pete Rose's last games as a player. He went to manage the Reds. And that was a memorable moment too, seeing him hit a line drive off of Lee Smith catch, you know, Ryan Sedberg catching the ball and going, oh my God, it was a great play. And then seeing it 30 plus years later on a replay on TV and telling my wife, I was at that game. So anyway, I digress. But the CFL, I like the CFL because it's Canadian, you know, I mean, I know the ratio has gotten to the point where there's less and less Canadian players. But, you know, to me, I want to see more Canadian players. I want to hear more about U Sports. You don't hear about U Sports. I would watch U Sports if it were available. I'd watch Canadian college football.
Same here. I mean, I would be perfectly happy if you had, you know, as far as the nine CFL franchises, you had nine, you know, starting quarterbacks who came from, you know, I mean, but, you know, again, it's easy for us to sit here and, you know, and wish things would be a certain way. But I mean, that's where business comes in. That's why, are you there?
I'm here. That's where Zoom left us off at.
You know, that's why I didn't major in business. I'm just no good at it.
Well, I don't know. You know, I'm like you. It's like, you know, people ask me my opinion. I'm like, well, you know, I've worked in government all my life. So it's like, well, you know, but the one thing we do know is what people like, you know, and again, going back to talking about marketing to the younger kids. And I have said this time, I mean, how many times on my, you know, and how many times on Twitter have you heard me say on CFL America, you know, what about a video game? Now the video game, and with all due respect to what I've seen out there in terms of a Canadian football game, they tried hard. However, it ain't Madden. And if you're going to market your product, you better have a Madden type game, much like you got FIFA, you got the FIFA game, you got the NBA 2K. You know, my video game collection is littered with different versions of Madden because it's, you know, but we, you know, so maybe that's what's going to, maybe that's what's in the works. We're going to have a CFL XFL video game because I would play that.
Yeah. I mean, whatever they can try, I'm all for, you know, again, and I'm working on a column about this, but in a perfect world, the CFL would succeed, the XFL would succeed. And, you know, if they wanted to have some sort of like player loan situation, that would be great.
Right.
But they would still kind of do their own thing. You know, the CFL would maintain its tradition and its gameplay. The XFL would continue to be innovative with their gameplay, but who knows? I mean,
well, kind of the way that the American Football League and the NFL, ideally, we wish that's how the merger could have been, looking back on it. Everybody kept their own identity.
Well, see, that shows you how old a guy I am, because I remember the AFL versus the NFL, and it was kind of heartbreaking to me when they merged.
Right.
Just because I love the AFL.
Right.
I love the mud and the dirt and playing on the
fields. And I missed all of that. I missed all that as a kid. Though it is funny when we, talking to people younger than us, and there are more of them now than there used to be. But I always have to remind people, you have to understand, I'm looking at this the point of view of somebody who was born when there were 14 NFL teams and Lombardi coached the Packers. Now, that's really stretching it quite a bit, but it's true. I mean, we have that perspective but again, with that said, it's about attracting the younger kids. So if, we're watching a league kind of, you're watching, the stands and going, where are all the people? And every year it just seems less and less, they're not marketing it because all of a sudden in a pandemic, here we are. And the CFL has and you and I have been following this real close since the pandemic started. Don't sound like they got a game plan, and whatever game plan they may have, it's much like when we invaded Iraq. We had a great invasion plan, but nobody had any plans for what happens afterwards. And I kind of think that's where, I don't even think we're there yet with the CFL. They had no plans for the pandemic, but once the pandemic hit, they just like, well, we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. That was obviously frustrating on a lot of levels, but yeah, you're right. It was almost like by the time, it's like they just waited everything out. And by the time you wait everything out, seasons, you can't play a season now.
I made the suggestion on Twitter, and some people shouted me down. Nobody really, I don't remember. But way back when, I'm like, well, why don't all the CFL teams just bring in all the Canadian players and let these guys try out for a year? Let it be a year of Canadian players. I don't think us as Americans are that. It's great that we have Americans play up there, but I would like to see Canadian talent. And
The main thing is I just want them to have I just want the CFL to have some kind of season this year, whether it's a full 18 game regular season or truncated or whatever.
Right.
I just want to see them play and see what happens.
Yeah. Well, with that said, as we wrap up the podcast here, hopefully as we move along into our next podcast, hopefully we'll get an idea of where we're at. But, for our next podcast, you and I do not know what it's going to be about, but it's going to be on a topic that's pertinent to both Canadian and American football. In terms of how we're going to do this show, we're going to talk to authors and a lot of different topics, but we are mainly a historical, we touch on history. And that's the nice thing about this podcast is we can talk about history, but also at the same time, talk about what's currently going on, because as my old college roommate, his father, who was a professor, said, his father was a history professor, you can't figure out the future unless you know where you came from.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm really interested in, is hearing the perspective of other, football historians. I mean, because we all, even those of us who came from the same era have different perspectives.
Right.
And I just enjoy hearing that.
Right.
And
Well, and that's why, we hooked up with Arnie Chapman and the Sports History Network, and here we are. So just as we close out here, I want to say special thanks again to George Washington at voevolution.com. And I can't thank George enough for his intro that he made for us, and for the help I know he's going to give us in the future.
Voice is seriously one of the absolute great voices.
I asked, I said, George, I want something that is very John Facenda-like. And not only did he deliver, but he spiked the ball after he delivered. He did a bang-up job on it. And I'm still getting messages from guys on our network going, oh, my God, that's great. That's awesome. So.
Well, I would expect nothing less from the Green Lantern. I mean, let's be honest.
Exactly. So, yeah, exactly. And talking about the Sports History Network, just a reminder to everybody to check out all the podcasts in the Sports History Network. We've got on the Sports History Network, Pigskin Dispatch. And Pigskin Dispatch is great because every day there's a new history lesson. Unlike us, we come out when job and time, jobs allow. But Pigskin Dispatch comes out every day, new history lesson on pro football. I learn something new every day, and I'm like, Wow, I did not know that. Then we have When Football Was Football with a good friend of mine, Joe Zimba. And I've known Joe for several years. And he wrote the definitive book on the Chicago Cardinals. We've got Pigskin Pass with Joe Zagorski. We got Lombardi Memories. And we also have Arnie's show, The Football History Dude. And the football family on... Football is family. We've got so many podcasts that it's just, I've got to write them all down. Otherwise I'll forget. Football is Family, the Football Odyssey. And lastly, in terms of football history, Oz Davis hosts The Goats and Historically Speaking. And if you've not listened to any of those, I would recommend that you give them all a try. And for Scott and, Scott and myself, thanks for listening. And check us out. Scott, let everybody know where you're at on the Twitter and on the interwebs.
Yep, just you just look up Scott Adamson, and that's my.
I'm losing you here a little bit. Well, I will speak for Scott because we're having technical difficulties, as you can hear. Scott Adamson is available at adamsonmedia.com and at adamsonsl at Twitter on Twitter, and you can read. Well, you actually can find both of us if you go to. CFL-radio.us. That will get you to our website on the Sports History Network. And you can find me at CFL America. And Scott, did I miss anything?
No, I believe you covered it all, my friend.
All right. Well, for Scott and myself, thanks for listening. And, you know, hope to be podcasting here real soon. Bye.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
We'll kick off for victory. Cheer them on to the Grey Cup March. Lusty men of energy, down the field on the Grey Cup March. They'll kick off for victory as we cheer to Great Cup.